From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Audie Cornish. It's time now for your letters. But first, a clarification. Yesterday, we told you about the Senate race in Hawaii. It's traditionally a blue state, but former Republican Governor Linda Lingle is putting up a good fight against Democratic Congresswoman Mazie Hirono. In our story, some of you heard us use the word Hawaiian to refer to all who live in the state. But it turns out Hawaiian is not analogous to Pennsylvanian or Californian. In Hawaii, the word is generally reserved for those whose ancestry on the island predates European settlement. Now to your letters. Minnesota Vikings player Chris Cluey and Baltimore Ravens linebacker Brendan Iamadejo have been outspoken in their support of same-sex marriage. In fact, a Maryland delegate urged the Ravens to silence Iamadejo for his vocal position. Enter Cluey, who wrote a strongly worded letter, much of which we can't repeat on air, to that delegate for his, in Cluey's words, vitriolic hatred and bigotry. The letter went viral, and Wednesday we spoke to both players. Iamadejo told us the reaction from his teammates and coaches has been encouraging, especially if you consider where it's coming from.
A sport that's known as a macho sport, known for, you know, for making gay slurs and whatnot, I'm glad to see a changing of the guard and people starting to broaden their horizons and accept equality, really.
Eric Alejandro of Alhambra, California, writes with this admission. I'm not a sports guy. In fact, I am ashamed to say that I am one of those people who thought that football players were, for the most part, meatheads. I have never been more happy to be proven wrong. Chris and Brendan are clearly intelligent, well-spoken men who are fighting for a great cause. Leslie Machado of Menifee, California adds, I am the sponsor for a high school gay-straight alliance. I was touched by the interview with NFL players Chris Cluey and Brendan Iamadejo. Actually, it made me smile through my tears. The students have been through so much, and it will be wonderful to play this interview for them at our next meeting this Friday. Please keep your letters coming. Just go to npr.org and click on Contact Us. Time capsules have been buried throughout history to help future generations understand the past. But they're not always deep underground. This summer, in West Virginia, Richard L. Harris discovered that sometimes they're hiding in plain sight.
There they were, deep inside a vast Berkeley Springs antique store, bins of cellophane-wrapped Life magazines, published weekly between 1936 and 1972. One in particular caught my eye, a special issue titled The Takeover Generation, 100 of the most important young men and women in the United States. It sold on the newsstand for 20 cents. The date? September 14th, 1962. Exactly 50 years ago today.
I wasn't sure I'd be here 50 years later.
Roy Rowan is very much here, now 92 years old. He was the assistant managing editor of Life magazine in 1962. This issue was his idea.
I called a couple of the domestic bureaus and bounced this idea off of them of doing an article I was thinking of then on some of the young movers and shakers in the country who were innovative and doing new things and might have a real impact on the world.
So they whittled the list down to 100, politicians, writers, scientists, businessmen. Yes, mostly men. Only 9 of the 100 were women. And there was only a smattering of minorities.
The glass ceiling was pretty solid in those days, and it was very, very hard for women to get into leadership roles. And, of course, today, so many of them are running corporations. Yeah, if you did this list today, you obviously would have many, many more women, many, many more Hispanics and blacks. It wouldn't be this lily-white list at all.
Most of those selected in 1962 were in their 20s and 30s. Just beginning to make a name for themselves. And some would become household names, authors Philip Roth and John Updike, opera diva Leontine Price. Others would reach the power elite, Harold Brown and Pete Peterson became cabinet secretaries. As you scan the profiles, you can almost hear the excitement and tumult that was the early 60s.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely.
The marshals would show up and that you and the others would step aside. Mr. Meredith would come into the university.
And let me say something else. When he mentioned, those weapons must be taken out of Cuba.
We were seeing aerial photographs of the missile sites in Cuba, and the Cold War, of course, was pretty much at a high. So it was a dangerous time. It was a time of uncertainty.
This was before Vietnam. This was before Watergate. It was before all the cynicism had set in.
Newton Minow, another of the Red Hot 100, was a young Chicago lawyer, tapped to be the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission.
A week before President Kennedy appointed me, I had been turned down for a position on our local suburban library board because I was too young.
A year before this special issue of Life, Minow, now 86, delivered a now famous speech to the National Association of Broadcasters criticizing television programming, a speech that's still quoted 50 years later.
I invite each of you to sit down in front of your own television set when your station goes on the air and stay there for a day. I can assure you that what you will observe is a vast wasteland.
I'm afraid that when I die, the first words in my obituary will be the vast wasteland, where I would prefer that they would talk about what we did to create public television, public radio, the communications satellite program, cheaper long-distance telephone rates, cable, UHF.
Just a mile away in Chicago, religion historian Martin Marty, who's 84, says he was delighted to be included among Life's Red Hot 100.
I'm still kind of a Nebraska country boy where you don't expect big things to happen, and a lot of things happen.
Religion, for one. Marty says 1962 was the high watermark for religious participation in this country.
I think about 47% of the American people said they were regular worshipers, and it's never been that high again.
But unlike the early 60s, when John Kennedy had to promise voters that the first Catholic president wouldn't take orders from the Pope, Marty doesn't believe Mitt Romney will face the same kind of resistance to his Mormon faith.
I don't think it's going to be that big a thing now as it was with Kennedy.
Thanks, he says, to immigration. His hometown of Lincoln, Nebraska, has more than 50 languages spoken in the public schools. We're not as homogeneous as we were in 1962.
You constantly hear, we've got to take America back, things like that. You're not going to take America back because there are too many Americas out there now.
Sputnik had been launched, the space age had begun, and that opened people's eyes to the idea that there are other worlds out there we might visit.
Frank Drake has been thinking of extraterrestrial life since he was 8. The chairman emeritus of the government-funded SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, is 82 now. Though he pioneered the search for life beyond our solar system, he was surprised to be included in that Life magazine.
I was very young. I was not well established, so I thought perhaps they were ahead of their time.
Perhaps no one else in this group of 100 has spent an entire lifetime on a goal he's unlikely to reach.
One of the things that's most impressed me over these last 50 years is how much the minds of people of Earth have changed on the subject of intelligent life in space. Back in the 1960s, it was a taboo subject. In a few decades, we should be doing searches that actually have a chance to succeed. And so I'm afraid I won't get to see that, but within the next 100 years, a lot of humans will.
Selecting future leaders is always perilous, but one of the Life 100, Newton Minow, hired an intern 20-odd years ago at his law firm and would write him a recommendation for a fellowship.
I said he's going to become one of the most important people in the country.
His name, Barack Obama. I'm Richard L. Harris.